Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of the show, we have he's back, attorney Ken Affianco, FOPlawyer.com. So thanks so much for being back on the show, Ken. We appreciate it. We've also got crowd favorite Rich Astaire-Apolli, former Secret Service, and his sidekick, Frank Loveridge. He hates it when I say that. Also retired Secret Service and retired LAPD Sergeant Marlon Marachi. He's also the host of the IA Guy podcast, which, of course, is on YouTube. And I believe on Instagram, if I'm not mistaken there. Am I good on that? All right, good. So I'm batting 1,000 so far. A shout out to our sponsors, Gauls, our title sponsor at Gauls.com, Compliant Technologies. Title sponsor is Gauls, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. I think we're wrapping up the seventh week on satellite now, thanks to them. GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and because of Safeguard, we're reaching about 1.5 million followers right now on the stream, and also TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com, and we got some really cool gear, like the shirt that I'm wearing right now. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thank you for carrying our content. Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and also lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? You know, we've got, this is a story that has kind of slipped through the cracks, but it's from Atlanta. I'm excited about talking about it. I think it's overdue. Atlanta board, they denied the appeal of an officer fired over a deadly traffic stop. I'd like to start off with that one, but actually Frank brought up a topic. We'll actually talk about Frank's topic, the funding for some of this stuff that's been going on around the country. We'll bring that up first. We'll cover the Atlanta story second. And then we've got some stories with video components. We have a Kern County deputies. They shoot a suspect who's armed with a hammer, a machete, and a firearm. I think when the cops ended up dealing with him, he was mostly down to the firearm. I think it was a long gun. Then we got a cop get shot during that one, by the way. Welfare check escalates into a shootout between a Baltimore cop and an armed man. Then we got Grand Rapids and Michigan police released body cam in response to a viral video of an arrest. Then we got a Houston police officers. They fatally shoot suspect who had a baseball bat and a chunk of concrete. You know, nothing like that. Then body cam video shows Salt Lake City police. They shoot and kill an armed man who broke into his ex-wife's home. So we'll cover all those depending on the time and availability that we have. So if you guys are ready, let's hop over to Fox5Atlanta.com, Atlanta board. Well, actually, you know what? Scratch that. Frank, you had brought up a topic that we were that you were interested in covering, and that was about the funding for all the stuff going on in LA. And I mentioned earlier before we started the show that I remember reading about when the riots were isolated, you know, to the LA area, that I saw an article that came out that said that there was a group that was primarily funded, almost entirely funded by the state of California. But you had some additional information that you were going to get out and let the people, the American taxpayers, know where their funding's going. So with that intro, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to bring up the point that we have $34 million of our taxpaying dollars that are being sent to these grant in form of grants to these NGOs that are out there. And there's one specifically they're looking at. I'll wait till that's substantiated. But I will say this, that we should not be paying for the demise of our cities. We should not be paying for people that are attacking our police officers. And we need to get to the bottom of the funding, because if we cut the funding off, we're going to see a lot less of these types of activities going on. And that's what we need to do, as well as to make arrests and hold these people accountable for what they're doing out there in LA, Chicago, New York City, and all of our central cities in Texas, and so on and so on. It's got to stop, Chip. It's got to come to an end. And cut the head of the steak off is what we have to do.
Rich?
Well, you got to remember, I'll add to what Frank said, is a lot of these NGOs were getting funded to the tune of, you know, many hundreds of millions of dollars, and they were running wide open during the last 4 years during the Biden crime administration, right? And there's no repercussions to these people. So, of course, they're going to use all these taxpayer-funded dollars to start funding all these demonstrations. Not to mention now, in the last, month, you've had Soros marry Uma Abedin, which plugs Soros directly into Democratic machinery. Right. So this isn't going to stop. But we've got to start holding people accountable. People need to start going into jail, particularly those people that are currently still working for the U.S. government, and let the Department of Justice start going after these people. This has got to stop. When you're delivering pallets of bricks and tactical gear and staging that for what becomes a riot, an anti-police riot, you can't allow that. People have got to be shut down. And it's just starting to see the same people showing up on both coasts over and over again. hey, people need to go to jail. And that's the way to shut this down.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, excellent commentary. And you're absolutely right. Hopefully people will be listening to this and they'll be thinking about where their tax dollars are going and want there to be some kind of change. Hopefully they'll just be outraged about this because you're right. I mean, I know that when people were coming across the border and getting free health care and getting stipends and cell phones and, you know, the insurance, all that stuff. And while I'm paying over $2,400 a month for just me and my wife with no kids for health care, I mean, that's a slap in the face. And that just got me enraged. So, well, thank you for the information, Frank, appreciate it. If you guys are ready, let's move on to the, to that story from Atlanta that we were going to cover. Atlanta board denies the appeal of an officer that's fired over a deadly traffic stop. I thought this was interesting. We have a deacon named Johnny Holman, who had a heart attack and died during this confrontation with then officer Karen Kimbrough. So let's see what happened. The City of Atlanta Civil Service Board, they've denied the appeal of a former police officer who killed a 62-year-old church deacon during a traffic stop that happened back in 2023. Atlanta police officer Karan Kimbrough, he had asked the board, which oversees appeals regarding suspensions, firings, and other disqualifications, he wanted the board to reverse his firing following the deadly confrontation. Now, back on August the 10th of 2023, Holman, he got into an accident as he's headed the Bible study. So that's our deacon. Atlanta police, they initially said that he was at fault. Authorities said that an officer tried to issue a citation to him, but our deacon refused to sign the ticket and he grew agitated and uncooperative. So I know when you're in the beginning, you're thinking, deacon, church deacon, you know, but now you got an uncooperative person, no matter who he is or going to church or whatever, Bible study, now he's being uncooperative. And so it continues saying, here's a quote saying, you're not going to scream at me. You understand what I'm telling you. Now you're either going to sign the ticket or you're going to go to jail. That's what Officer Kimbrough is heard telling Holman in released police footage. Now, remember, the officer ended up being fired. While repeating, sign the ticket, the officer tries to grab onto our bad guy. And look, I'm saying bad guy because he's uncooperative, leading to what appeared to be a struggle and ends with the officer forcing the 62-year-old man to the ground. Now, the struggle continued. The officer is telling him to put his hands behind his back, and Holman repeats over and over again, I can't breathe. Now, the officer then uses his taser to shock our bad guy, and it was a drive stun. So the probes were not deployed. It was a drive stun. And after our bad guy goes silent, the officer calls for medics saying, hey, I think he passed out on me. And he goes on to say that the officer, you can hear, he's talking to somebody saying, I took him to the ground and stuff. He grabbed my hand like he was going to hit me. So I punched him a couple of times, tased him, and put him in cuffs. Now, our bad guy was rushed to the hospital. He was pronounced dead. They did an autopsy and determined that the 62-year-old's death was a homicide, which only means that it's an unnatural death. So that's not a big deal. But they said he had heart disease, also contributed, was also a contributing factor in his death. Now, the chief, Darren Schubaum, terminated the officer for failing to have a supervisor on the scene prior to physical engagement and arresting our bad guy for refusing to sign the citation. So I guess that was some kind of internal policy they had. It said that the bad guy's family's been calling for the officer to be arrested and charged in the bad guy's death. Now, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, GBI, they do a lot of these investigations. They really have a pretty good rep. They completed their inquiry into the death. And it was turned, they turned its file over to the Fulton County District Attorney's Office, Fannie Willis, who, of course, needs no introduction, who has not decided whether to pursue the charges or not. But that's always kind of scary if Fannie Willis is in charge of this decision. And it goes on to say that Atlanta police officers tell Fox 5 that they do not believe the explanation given by police officials regarding the firing of the officer involved in the death of Johnny Holman. Police say the responding officer to a traffic accident decided to use a taser on they call him a senior citizen, really, he's like 62, he's not senior yet, after he allegedly became combative. But the police chief terminated that officer, explaining it was because he failed to notify a supervisor before the encounter escalated. And I agree, that's kind of weak. In May of 2024, the Atlanta City Council reached a settlement with the surviving family for $3.8 million. And in the report, the Atlanta Civil Service Board ruled that the officer violated the department's standard operating procedure, SOP, finding that his decision to not wait for a supervisor was willful and deliberate. The board said that the officer should have waited for an on-site supervisor approval to arrest the bad guy, stating that the deacon was not a flight risk and that there was no imminent threat of harm to Mr. Combro or to the public. So that's the way they ended it. I certainly have my opinions, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about. Marlon, you know, this is your kind of wheelhouse. We got 2 minutes before we take our first commercial break. What do you think about this?
A lot. What they forgot to mention in the article is the fact that what we always teach is risk versus reward, right? AKA is the juice worth the squeeze. I mean, what you really have is just a traffic violation. And then you start analyzing the fact that who created the exigency here. You know, I think the quote unquote, you're not going to scream at me. You understand what I'm telling you. Now you're either going to sign the ticket or you're going to jail. You know, kind of puts Mr. Holman in a situation like, okay. And then next thing you know, the fight is on and the use of force and everything. So a lot of when it comes to use of force, the way we analyze here in LAPD, what I've been doing in consulting a lot is the fact that when you substantially deviate from department policy, tactics, and procedure, you have to be able to justify that deviation, even though it's substantial. And of course, all of us can have a different measurement of what substantial is. And so, yeah, this is a tough one, man. This reflects real negative. You got an unbecoming conduct. I just don't know. The fact that, you know, you go from a traffic stop and next thing you know, you got this use of force where you stun gun, you know, use a taser, deploy it. And next thing you know, he suffered a heart attack. That's a pretty tough line to overcome and say, hey, you know what, reinstate me. And I think I'm going to be a better officer. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's good to have people off from different sides of the country because they definitely do things differently than we do over here on the East Coast. And Ken, I want to hear what you have to say about this because I know that you've represented guys doing stuff like this. But our protocol over here is a lot different on the East Coast. But it's time for our first commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Galls at Galls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know that we can buy our gear from a lot of different sources, and especially when you consider going online. But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Galls at Galls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking at gear, please consider going to our title sponsor at Galls.com, and they're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to give you a code that you can type in. It's radio15, and that'll give you 15% off your next purchase at Galls.com, and that is good until June the 30th. So again, radio15 to get 15% off at Galls.com, and they have gift cards. We give away two every week on the show. We're giving one away today. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with the new Galls gift cards, and they'll be your new best friends. Again, all you have to do is go to thegalls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. And just kind of let everybody know where we were at. We were talking about a story that where we have a cop on a traffic infraction call, and he pulls a guy over, and our bad guy, and I'm saying bad guy because he's non-compliant. So in police terminology, I'm going to call him a bad guy when you're uncooperative, and he refuses to sign the ticket. And in a lot of jurisdictions, that's a jailable offense. And so the cop tells this guy that, and he ends up having to go hands on. I think that he more than likely would have had to go, but apparently there's an SOP for this agency requiring the officer to go through a supervisor before he makes that decision. Kind of asinine to me to do that. We certainly never did that at my agency, and I don't foresee them ever doing that. But that's where we're at. And the guy ends up having trouble breathing. He dies, and the medical examiner's office said that he had some kind of a coronary or cardiovascular issue that contributed to him dying. He was only 62 years old. I know they said it was a senior citizen or something, which makes me laugh. When I was younger, I would have thought, yeah, senior citizen. But now I'm thinking, senior citizen is 62. What, are you kidding me? The guy can live. Yeah, look at Marlon laughing, young buck. So, the guy should be able to live up to close to 90. But Ken Affianco, this is also your wheelhouse. And I know that we're talking, you know, Marlon just talked about how they do things over on, you know, on the LA side, on the West Coast. Bring the East Coast common sense to the equation. Ken, the floor is yours.
Well, I'm going to speak to you guys with two different type hats. One as a law enforcement officer that is part of a traffic unit right now. So when it comes to writing tickets, certainly that's what I do. But I can tell you from my perspective, up until about 10 years ago, the laws in Florida were that you had to sign a citation. You do not have to do that now unless it's a criminal citation or a mandatory court appearance. Here's what I used to do when people didn't sign citations. No problem. Put refused on the ticket and write them another ticket for refusing to sign the ticket. So now they have to go to court. So to me, it was irrelevant if they signed it or not. If they didn't, I write you another ticket, you got to go to court. So in that sense, I think Frank may have mentioned it was a juice worth the squeeze or someone. It may have been Marlon that mentioned that.
Marlon.
Yeah, here, I wouldn't even have messed with it. But he did. So now let's talk about it from an attorney's perspective. From representing officers that get involved in use of force and all other types of investigations known to man, I can tell you this much. I do not know the laws in Atlanta or Georgia for that matter, and I don't know the policies. But let me say this real quick. He wasn't sustained, at least from the article, for excessive force or improper use of force. He was sustained for not calling a supervisor. I assure you, as crappy of a lawyer as I am, I could have beat that on my worst day in an arbitration, because there is no question. If I would have done a public records request for that agency, how many people have gone hands-on without calling a supervisor? They'd have charged me $20,000 for the copies they would have had to make for a public records request. It happens all the time. There's no question about it. I've never seen a more ridiculous policy in my life, but nonetheless, they have to abide by the policies. This particular case smells of political cowardice. They buckled to this pastor, who I'm sure was well known throughout the community, a lot of political pressure, and they fired the guy. But nonetheless, at the end of the day, you do have a dead guy. But I say this about every case involving use of force. If you do what you're told, none of this ever happens. End of story. They paid $3.5 million for a guy that fought the police. To me, they should have taken it to trial and let him earn every penny of it. That's me. I see nothing wrong with it other than this minor violation of the policy. The guy died. Yeah, people die when they fight the police. I don't know what else to tell you. Did he do something excessive? Did he hit him in the throat? Did he break his neck? What did he do? He tased him. That's the protocol. So I'm sorry. I would tell you this. I would take on this guy's defense every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And if it is just with the violation of notifying a supervisor, I would be very confident that I could get his job back. Now, mind you, let me say this real quick. In Florida, there's a state statute that he has a mandatory right for a third-party arbitrator to decide his punishment. I guess they don't have it in Atlanta. I guess the board decides. In Florida, we get automatic right to arbitration. So that's what I have to say about it.
Wow. All right. Well, Marlon, go ahead and jump in, and then we'll have Rich and Frank.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'm going to kind of definitely piggyback on what Ken said about a lot of things that come to mind. So one of the things that you definitely have to analyze in terms of penalty, right, is developer discharge. That's the way the GOAT, right, the deputy chief from LEPD who began in IA way back in the days, always talked about, look, you got to make a decision whether you're going to develop or discharge. I'm with Ken. I haven't seen in my times doing my prosecuting cops and even defending cops where a violation of policy is not a fireable offense. 100%. When you start talking about serious allegations of misconduct, you start talking about false statement, misleading statement, perjury, conduct unbecoming, off-duty stuff that just is horrendous, right? With that being said, what we don't know is I don't have the IA report to even know what the actual allegations were. I think, Chip, this is just my understanding, but I believe that when you refuse to sign a ticket, it's when you have to do a supervisor request. I could be wrong. I don't know the policies and the laws and the rules and regs in the state of Georgia. However, if we're going to talk about just violation of policies, it doesn't rise to the level to start terminating officers for that. And here's the deal. Just because something doesn't look good, right? We're not in the business of things that don't look good because this person passed away. And I agree, it's got some political influence behind the scenes, you know, ex parte. Yeah, this is a tough one in terms of how do you go from a traffic stop, right? And then all of a sudden you got an in-custody death. That's a tough one, but I'm with Ken on certain issues for sure.
All right, well, Rich, Marlon left you 2 seconds, but look, we're going to go to our next commercial break. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, in today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety. It's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats, and that's where MyTech which is the division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MyTech provides advanced protective solutions that are designed for law enforcement, corrections, and also first responders. Now, their Eagle Protect nitrile gloves, they offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Now, not only that, but their Eagle Protect nitrile gloves, they offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. And their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers, they get 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact. And we're not done. They continue the kill for up to 28 days, and they help you stay protected both on and off duty. And when safety is non-negotiable, trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need. You can learn more about how to equip your team today by simply going to ComplianTechnologies.com/MyTech. Again, ComplianTechnologies.com/MyTech, because the best defense starts with the right protection. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up next week, Undercover Operations on June the 25th. You can sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Ken Affianco. We've also got Rich Scaropoli. He is from the Secret Service. And we've also got Frank Loveridge, also from Secret Service. Marlon Marachi, he is from a retired sergeant from LAPD, also the host of the IA Guy on YouTube and Instagram. So we've been talking about a cop that got in the grease because he pulled a guy over for a traffic infraction, the guy who was a church deacon, and they're making a big deal out of that. But, you know, he refuses to sign the ticket. Cop tells him, if you don't sign, you're going to go to jail. And then the cop puts his hands on the guy. There's a resist. He ends up tasing the guy multiple times, I believe. And the guy ends up saying he has trouble breathing, ends up dying. Medical examiner said the guy had some kind of heart issues that contributed to his death. Family sues, gets a multi-million dollar handout from the Atlanta Police Department, and the cop lost his job. And now, you know, he was asking a board to reinstate him. That's kind of where we're at. Rich, love to hear your thoughts on this. And then Frank.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you know, I have a big problem with the media playing this guy up as the upstanding, you know, church going deacon, right? Let me remind everyone that Al Sharpton, who is one of the biggest cop agitators and cop fighters internationally, is also a self-proclaimed church deacon, but he'd be the first guy I would put handcuffs on if I had the opportunity, right? I don't care if I stop a car, I roll into a scene and the guy gets out of the car dressed like the Pope. That's irrelevant to me. So I put that to the side and throw that right out. It means nothing to me. I also have a problem with the fact that this department mandates that you've got to call a supervisor in. What do I need to call a supervisor in if a guy doesn't want to sign a ticket? This isn't General Motors where I'm working an assembly line where I can shut it down. This is a dynamic, ongoing police situation. Calling in a supervisor for this type of thing tells me two things. One, I can't rely on my cops in the field. And two, the supervisors, the management, doesn't understand the gravity of what's going on during a police car stop, whether you're responding to an accident or it's your out and out typical car stop. The situation is too evolving. I can't sit and wait for supervisors to come in. I've got to deal with what I've got in front of me. My officers need to deal with what's in front of them. It just isn't applicable to this situation. That's what I've got here.
Wow. You know, while it was amazing while you were talking, Rich, Frank had a picture of Al Sharpton on his desk that he actually removed during your little routine there. So, but Frank, absent the picture that's now missing off your desk, you're up.
Well, Chip, honestly, I don't know if you know this or not, but when Rich was in New York City, he was on the Pope detail during a visit. We were very concerned that he was going to write a ticket for the Pope mobile for speeding inside of a football stadium when he was already in the event.
Hey, he should have seen that sign. It said 25 and under. I don't want to hear it.
But let's get back to the story here, if we can get back to this real quick. I want to, first of all, agree with Ken. This probably should not have happened. There should have been a de-escalation, not an escalation. But it did lead to a confrontation. And to have to wait for a supervisor to get there while you're in a confrontation to make a decision whether you use non-lethal force to subdue someone is ridiculous. And that's what we need to look at. The mindset behind this police officer, there's no way he knew a 62-year-old man who might have been a little overweight, had any type of heart condition whatsoever. He deployed the weapon because he felt he needed to do that to protect himself. Now, to have got to that point, I think we all agree that this could have been de-escalated and handled better. But as far as charging him with any type of offense, I think is ludicrous as also. And I just want to say that until someone's been out there, you know, I don't care about these people on the board. If you've not been out there before and been in a physical confrontation, you know, you have to take these matters into the fact that possibly this person felt that he was in jeopardy and he had to use whatever force he needed to subdue the individual.
You know, and can I just add one thing to that? The media reports this guy as being 5'8", just short of 250 pounds, right? So maybe there was some pre-existing condition, yet when he turns around and argues with the cop, that right away sets off the antenna in my head and tells me this guy's been a problem with the police prior to this incident, right? Could it have been de-escalated? Yeah, it could have. But once again, it comes down to if people just did what they were told when they're interacting with the police, this situation would never have happened.
Wow. I agree 100%, Rich. Non-compliance. What's the common denominator in every one of these scenarios? Non-compliance.
Non-compliance. Yeah. Yeah. Comply and complain later. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Even if it's a criminal violation, you can complain to the state attorney, DA, you know, all day long afterwards. But you're right. Great commentary, guys. We're going to move on to our next one here. We got some stories of video components, and we don't have much time left. So moving along, our next story, it's at our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, which is at rumble.com. Kern County deputies, they shoot a suspect who ends up being armed with a hammer, machete, and a firearm. Oh!
One at gunpoint. Here you can see Diaz point his firearm at a deputy. After being struck, Diaz still raised his firearm and shot at a deputy. This is the deputy's view moments before he was struck in the hand.
Hey, I'm hit!
Two pop up at him, 999.
Tira la pistola! Tira la pistola!
Diaz was still in possession of the firearm and posed a deadly threat to deputies.
Or at least that's how the call initially went out. We're in Bakersfield, California. So we're kind of overland in Marlin's neck of the woods in California. The Kern County Sheriff's Office released body-worn camera footage. It's a May 9th officer-involved shooting that happened in Northeast Bakersfield. It resulted actually in injuries to a deputy as well, the suspect, and also to a woman. So on May the 9th of 2025, so not long ago, at 6:30 in the morning, deputies were dispatched following reports of a guy, a male suspect, armed with a hammer, machete, and a firearm. Now, when the deputies get there, they identify the suspect. He's 42 years old, so he's 20 years younger than our last bad guy. And his name is Saudi Giovanni Diaz, and he's armed with a firearm, but it looks like a long gun, but he doesn't have the hammer and the machete anymore. An officer-involved shooting ensues. This guy comes out of the doorway. He's on the porch, and he's got this long gun. And he points the gun, you know, at the cops, and they kind of line him up, and he goes down. But then while he's on the ground, our deputy that's wearing the body cam that we're looking at, the shot goes, the guy shoots, and shoots the deputy in the hand. Deputy does a pretty good job of getting out of the way. There's a few shots. Then our deputy moves around, and he uses a car for cover, does two controlled shots. And you can clearly see, at least in the, well, there were a couple of videos on this, but in the second video, you can clearly see the bad guy after the second controlled shot. There's maybe like a 2 or 3 second gap between them. So when I say controlled, I mean, he's not doing a double tap. He's doing controlled. Remember, he's got a pistol. It looks like he's got a decent distance. And the bad guy looked like he had a rifle, but that second shot did the trick. And the bad guy goes down on that porchway. Then it says that the call initially came in I guess a female said that she'd been shot by the suspect, and they ended up transporting her to the hospital for her injuries. The suspect, he was also taken to the hospital, but he was arrested. So he did survive the shoot. He was charged with attempted murder, burglary, kidnapping, where I'm sure the female comes in, kidnapping with a firearm, assaulting a police officer, and carrying a loaded firearm without a registration. So doesn't say that he was a convicted felon, but that's the way that it went down. Commentary on this, guys. There's a lot of moving parts, but the cop wearing the body cam getting hit in the second string of fire kind of surprised me. So whoever wants it, Ken, you want to start us off on this one, Ken Afianko? And we appreciate it in advance, Ken.
Yeah, no problem. This particular case, what was amazing to me is, I don't know, what did they shoot the guy, 5 or 6 times and he goes down? And he still has enough wherewithal or not injured enough to turn around and shoot at a deputy. And then the deputy takes 2 or 3 more shots after that, and the guy lives.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing to me. Is it a good shoot? Absolutely. But that goes to show you, don't assume someone's neutralized because you shot him. This is a perfect example of that. And luckily, he only got shot in the hand and not in the head or something. So it ended up good for the officers, but amazing to me, this guy lived.
Yeah. All right, Rich.
Yeah, picking up on what Ken said, right? You never underestimate the ability of a bad guy to continue to engage in the firefight, right? We've seen this unfold many, many times. A cop's chasing a bad guy down the street. Cop slips and falls, lands on a piece of glass, bleeds to death on the sidewalk. Yet we shoot a perp 9-10 times, and the guy gets up without a scratch and walks away, right? So I totally think this was a good shoot. Totally agree with you. I'm only sorry they didn't kill this guy.
Yeah, it could have been so much worse. You know, I Frank, I wish we had more cops showing up on the scene with long guns, though. I really would love to see a long, you know, I mean, the guy with a pistol going up a guy with a long gun, not a fair fight.
Right. We used to obviously bring weapons of all sorts. I remember, Richie, we used to bring in the MP5. We had all kinds of weapons out there that we used because we wanted to make sure that we had overwhelming force to make sure that we didn't have to deal with a situation like that. But yeah, it was a good shoot. And, you know, every one of us has been to the police academy. We shoot to stop the threat. And that means if we're making that decision to use lethal force, we're going to continue until we stop that threat. And if it means taking the guy down and taking him out, that's what it's all about, because we have to protect the public. In this case, this guy had already shot somebody else besides that, and we know that he was a consistent threat. So my kudos to the officers. They did a great job. I agree with all of you, and I do believe that this was well done.
Yeah, and like Ken said, just another – it's a good reminder. It's a good video to watch for cops, even academy cops, because – never assume just because the guy, bad guy goes down that the threat is over. And I got to admit, you know, watching these and doing these every day, I see the bad guy go down. I have to admit, I thought that it was over. Now, I would have liked the thought when I was there, I would have kept my gun trained on the bad guy, been issuing more commands and stuff. I did not anticipate the bad guy. And I know that no one there anticipated the bad guy that pulled the trigger again in that position. Marlon.
Just going to echo with all my other colleagues, a good shoot. You know, just when you do your compelled interview, just make sure you just articulate and explain all of your actions. It doesn't get any closer than textbook when it comes to this OIS, you know,
So Marlon, I got to ask you, because this is a video, so the audio people can't see it. But when Marlon's saying it's a good shoot, he's shaking his head back and forth, you know, horizontally like a no. But you're saying it's a good shoot. So I'm just having fun with you, you know. But I
meant to say it's a great. Yeah, I just want to make sure. Yeah, I just want to make sure that yeah. I want to make sure that the audience understands that when you do, you know, hey, look, it's not, God forbid you get into an OIS. All of us would like to go through our careers without getting involved in such a emotional, you know, something that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life. I get all that. However, if you do happen to be involved in an OIS, just know that interview is that's your livelihood right there. So make sure you just have some really, really good articulation and explanation when it comes to you engaging into deadly force. That's all.
No doubt. And perfect timing, guys, coming up on our third commercial break. So stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own attorney Ken Affianco here, and also Captain Brett Bartlett. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're watching the show and you have your own agency, your chief or sheriff, they've got a great deal for you. The founder, Dan O'Kelly, has arranged it to where you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. All you have to do is go to thegunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Ken Apianko. We've also got from Secret Service, Rich Steropoli. We've got Frank Loveridge and also retired LAPD Sergeant Marlon Maracci. Ken, you wanted me to go to a particular video. What can you give me the number for the video? Do you know which
it's
one
it is? Number 4 on the leftover videos.
Okay, I'll go to video number 4 then. So, guys, we're going to go cover a story with another video component. We're going to jump over to Houston. I'm getting it from Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel. Houston police officers fatally shoot a suspect who had a baseball bat and a concrete chunk. He picks up this chunk of concrete later in the video.
Sir, drop the bat. Get your taser out, bro. Try it. Drop the bat, sir. Sir, please drop the bat. Taser. Taser deployed. Sir, please drop the bat.
Sir, drop the bat. Drop the bat. Drop the bat. Sir, drop the bat. Drop it. Give an updated location. Sir, drop the bat. Drop it, sir. Sir, drop it. Sir, drop it. Drop the bat.
But we're in Houston, Texas. Houston police, they released this body cam video of a fatal shooting that occurred last month in Spring Branch area. Officer shot and killed a man named Albizo Rodriguez, who investigators say threatened police with a baseball bat and a chunk of concrete. Now look, this is a slow mo. It's a slowly escalating situation. So not a lot of, fast moving stuff. But the incident happened on Friday, May the 23rd. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. So middle of the afternoon, officers respond to a call from a security guard at a nearby strip center who said that a man had assaulted him with a bat earlier in the morning and was refusing to leave the property. So when the cops get there, they find this guy. Now he's 2 years older than our 62-year-old bad guy from the first story, right? So he's 64 years old, and they attempt to make contact with this guy. He becomes aggressive. He's swinging it. He looks a lot older than 64, though, doesn't he? Even when he swings the bat, he's not swinging the bat like a 64-year-old. He's swinging the bat more like an 84-year-old, I think. But he's swinging the bat at officers. But I didn't see that happen so much. He's ignoring repeated commands in both English and Spanish. And he's moving. So officers are kind of having like walk through him. He's ignoring repeated commands, and they deployed their tasers multiple times. There really didn't seem to be a good taser hit, though. And then the suspect ends up eventually, in addition to holding the baseball bat, picks up a piece of concrete off the ground and continues approaching officers and while still holding the bat. So finally, we have an officer, Kay Gideon, assigned to the Northwest Patrol Division. He fires his weapon multiple times. He hits our I'm going to call him our bad guy. Paramedics end up pronouncing the guy dead at the scene. So it's not the most convincing video when it comes to, when we shoot bad guys, we want it to be, convincing, like, wow, the cop had no other choice. Ken Apianko, I know you have reasons for wanting to talk about this. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Go ahead, buddy. You're up.
Well, there's a lot of things in this video that I found, interesting. Let's put it that way. But I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. I'm going to play a prosecutor. What in the world changed by the time you followed him for 5 minutes through traffic, him waving a baseball bat, him picking up a brick, to the time you shot him where he wasn't in traffic anymore? He's in a parking lot. He seemed to be in a state where you could easily have taken a taser and tried it again at that point in time. So my concern is, why then and not before? As soon as this guy started walking in traffic, I think you had every absolute justification to use deadly force because he already threatened somebody with the baseball bat. He's walking in traffic. You get civilians in the middle of the road in a car that were easily could have been targeted by this bad guy. But yet you wait till he's in a parking lot with no one else around, and then you use deadly force. That's the devil's advocate part of what I'm saying. Was the shooting lawful? In Florida, yes, it would be lawful. But my problem is the timing of it. I can tell you this from working over 100 shootings. What I've seen in the last few years, especially younger officers, are more hesitant to use deadly force when they have a right to do so. I don't know why that is. Maybe because there's a body camera on them and they don't want to look like they're overreacting. I don't know. But to me, it's a scary trend. They should have used deadly force before that guy got into traffic. You're putting all those civilians in the roadway in harm's way. That's what gave me concern in this situation. Again, is it a good shoot? Yes, it's a good shoot. But my concern is, why did you wait 5 minutes to do so? That's the comment I have on that video.
You know, and I there were a couple times. I know people get a little taser happy, and I'm not. Look, I think tasers are a great tool. There were one, it's always easier than Monday morning quarterback. There was one or two times where the guy, he really acted like a lot older than what he was. It's hard to put that in perspective unless you watch the video. But there were a couple times where it almost seemed that they may have had enough time just to run up and just like to push him, you know, when he was walking away from them towards the parking lot. And just not a, he wasn't walking like he was like a sturdy guy. I think that if just a push would have landed this guy on the ground. There were a couple of times where I thought that maybe a push or running up and just kicking him when he had his back to you and walking away might have done the trick. But I hate to put that out there because I think that the shoot was justified. But I agree with Ken that it at least here in Florida would have been justified earlier. However, I might have treated this guy a little differently than I would have treated a younger guy that was more capable and moving that bat around. He didn't appear as capable as a lot of other 64-year-olds that I've seen or enrolled with. So, any other commentary on this, guys? Are you guys ready to move on to the next one? All right. Well, Ken, thanks for pointing that out. And, there's definitely a difference between that reasonable standard and that necessary standard too, as well. I know that we don't talk about that a lot, but we've been de-escalating for decades, right? It's now in the news now, and it's a thing, but it's not a new thing. The cops have been doing it for a long time. Let's go ahead and cover video number two. You know, we have just enough time to do this. I think it's a welfare check. Rumble.com, this is Butter. Welfare check escalates into a shootout between a Baltimore cop and an armed man.
Give me 10-3. Show me your hands. Show me your hands. Chest fired. Drop the gun. Come here. Come out. Come out with your hands up. Show me. I'm in the rear. Drop the gun. I'm good. We got more shots fired. He's got a gun in his hand. He's in the house.
Drop the gun.
Come out with your hands up. Hands up. Come out to me. Come out to me. Come out. Damn it. You gotta get down on the ground, sir. You gotta get down on the ground.
So let me go through this quickly. We got two officers with Baltimore. They get a 911 call. And upon arrival, the officers contacted the 911 caller, proceeded to the alley behind the residence where the call was at. Now, the cop that went to the rear in the alley, he sees this guy at the rear door in the alleyway. The officer in the alley encounters the guy, matching the description, and then all of a sudden, poof, the guy takes a shot and ducks inside the house. And so the officer goes down the radio, so, hey, you know, shots fired. Then the officer engages in gunfire. The officer's first behind a plastic trash dumpster, and I think he realizes it, so that's really not cover. That's more of concealment. He moves behind a vehicle, and then he gets in a shootout with this guy, and he's doing shots. It seems like there's a female in the car yelling and screaming. He tells her at one point to get out. I don't think she ever did, because I could hear her screaming the whole time. But the cop eventually hits the bad guy and gives commands to the bad guy to come out. The cop actually, we see some cops, they stay where they're at. They don't want to get close to the bad guy at gunpoint. They just wait, and he ends up bleeding out. This cop advances at gunpoint, gives the bad guy commands, that comes out, and the guy ends up dying, but they do try to save him. And there's another female officer that comes up, and they do try to give first aid to the guy, but the guy had been shot, and it seemed like a completely justified shooter. Bad guy was 43 years old, named Glenn Petty Jr. So commentary on this, guys, we got about a minute and a half. Frank?
So I just want to say, they tried to enter from the front, they went around the rear, and then they're confronted with the individual that takes a shot at him. So we can all agree this is a justifiable shoot. And on top of that, I mean, obviously he recognized the fact that he did not have cover, proper cover, and he moved forward. I think he did everything under those reasonable circumstances, I mean, to do what he could to stop the threat and to basically eliminate the threat, because this individual had a weapon and obviously was had the propensity of using it. So my congratulations for him for doing his job.
Yeah. You know, it didn't make a lot of sense, Rich, for me, you know, for the homeowner coming out, taking a shot, and then getting a shootout with the cops. But, you know, but of course, not a lot, you know, there's a lot of mental illness going around too, though.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one of the most dangerous things any uniformed cop can respond to. You're responding to somebody's house for a mental health check. You don't know what you're walking into. And in this case, the guy steps out and engages the cops in a firefight. But I think the police, the uniforms went above and beyond by administering this guy first aid, right? Because you don't know, maybe there's five more people in that house. Who's clearing the house while they're administering first aid to this perp that they just lit up, right? So I think they did a fantastic job. Good job all around.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed, guys. Well, guys, another great show. Big thank you to Ken Affianco, Rich Scarapoli, Frank Loveridge, and also Marlon Marachi. And hey, the IA guy, you can find him on YouTube and also on Instagram. That's his podcast. And I usually take this opportunity to talk about the Wound of Blue at thewoundofblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So it's really a fantastic organization that I can't really say enough about. And guys, if you're watching the show and you're interested in making contact with Rich Scarapoli or Frank Loveridge, both retired Secret Service, you know, LinkedIn is a great platform to reach these guys at. And you will see them regularly on Fox News and other national news outlets as well. Ken Affianco, if you get in the grease and you're a cop and you're in the Tampa Bay area, you need to get a hold of this guy. Or if you're just single, you know, I'm joking about the last part. Marlon Marachi, the IA guy, check out his podcast. He's over in the LA side of the country in California. But appreciate everybody and being part of the show. A shout out again to our sponsors, guys, Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, GunLearn, Blue the Gold, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and also Two Bells. We'll look for you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern, but we appreciate everybody's support.